Why should you visit TheChairShot.com? TheChairShot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. TheChairShot.com. Always use your head. Attitude, bitch.
Hello and welcome to the Raw Reaction. This is Tony, your sex chat voice, here with Andrew.
Hello, ladies.
Val Penis, how are you?
Hold on, let me take off my towel and I'll tell you.
All right. So Harry's not here. And this is becoming more and more frequent. And I'm looking at a chart here of our ratings. And I'm just saying, whenever Harry's not here, these numbers spike up.
So I guess you could say there's a correlation between who's on and who's off, huh?
Yeah. Interesting little tidbits of information here that I see.
Huh. I guess that's something to put, you know, in the old think tank, and maybe we could gnaw on that a little later.
I mean, we do have a new opening.
We do, and it was kind of cool. I like the whole with attitude, bitch.
Bitch, right? Just so you know, we could say bitch. So we're gonna.
In case you forgot. In case you thought we were PG, like what we're covering.
Well, that's
no.
When you know a feud is intense, right? When Brock Lesnar or Roman Reigns says bitch, that's when you're like, oh, this is in the next level. This is intensity.
Yes, you see, WWE writers use bitch like just like an emphatic punctuation. So instead of exclamation marks, they're just like, you know, add a bitch right here. That's where we're going to take the beat, and that's when they're going to know it's serious business. Ah, yeah.
Unless it's WrestleMania season, then they'll say punk bitch, and that's when it gets really intense.
True. I'm surprised no one said punk bitch in Chicago. Like, that seems like it was a missed opportunity.
Sasha probably said it while she was driving away. Oh, she wasn't in Chicago tonight. So, you guys, Raw happened, and that's what we're here to talk about. That's what we get paid the big bucks to do. That's why we take moments out of our busy schedules to sit here and talk about wrestling for the money.
Oh, for the monies. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, since Harry's not here, it's probably – I mean, and since we haven't used a format in probably 3 months or so, we're just going to go down the, you know, the show itself and – recap from there. So why not start at the beginning? We get some little stills from the pay-per-view before, and I'm always curious as to why they considering the whole dynamic of the pay-per-view model has changed. But whatever. We get the focus on Nia Jax versus Ronda Rousey, and this was one of three matches that I have yet to see. When I tell you my past week has been busy, that is a damn understatement. I tried to squeeze in Money in the Bank before Raw today, and only got to a couple of matches. But for those that did not see, spoiler alert, Ronda she won technically by DQ. Alexa Bliss came in after winning the Money in the Bank ladder match, knocked Nia on her ass with the briefcase, and then attacked Ronda as well, and won the title. So Alexa Bliss is your new women's champion, and she was here on Raw to gloat about it and be her perfect self. Kurt Angle was here to it was funny to see the show open with the title and the briefcase on a table just so Kurt Angle could hand Alexa Bliss the title. But I like that mainly because that's exactly what Alexa Bliss would want to do. She would want a show of her, you know, being handed the belt and everything. This brought out Ronda Rousey, who was incredibly angry. And in a moment of awesomeness where we have yet to see this particular side of Ronda, yet everyone has clamored for it, Ronda goes apeshit. She grabs she attacks Alexa, grabs the briefcase, beats Alexa's ass with it, and then turns her anger towards Kurt Angle and beats him down with the briefcase as well until refs come. Then she handles the refs like nothing, beats up some more, you know, people, goes back to Alexa. Ultimately, this leads to Ronda Rousey getting suspended for 30 days, and I have a few questions about that that you might know better than myself, but let's talk about Alexa Bliss winning the belt. Do you think it was the right decision to, A, give her the Money in the Bank briefcase, and, B, give her the win so soon?
Honestly, it can't be much worse than the other alternatives. Because, you know, we covered it last week, and many other podcasts covered it, and no one really seemed excited for the whole Nia Ronda thing. Like, most of us figured Ronda would look okay because she impressed us that much at Mania, but it's really a sad dynamic when you think that the person that you've literally seen wrestle once is going to be fine, but the woman that's been on WWE programming for the better portion of, like, 2 years between NXT and Raw, everybody's like, oh, that's going to suck. She's bad. And she was the champion. Ain't that some shit?
Yeah, Nia holding the belt, I don't think did any favors for anyone. I wasn't a fan. I'm still not. I mean, I haven't been a fan of Nia's, I don't think, ever. And the whole flip-flopping of the characterization of bullying to being a bully to fighting for the bullies to fighting against all bullying, it was bad writing. So that didn't help. I thought that this was a nice way to give Ronda an out where she didn't have to win the title, but she also did not have to lose against Nia Jax, which, not that it'd be a horrible decision, but it would just be like, whatever. So I'm actually pretty happy with the decision. I like Alexa Bliss as champion. I like what they did. And it prevents us from having to deal with a, you know, months-long situation where they book the briefcase holder as someone who loses consistently simply because they have the briefcase. Case in point, tonight. I'm okay with it. Yeah, I'm okay with the women's briefcase just not being a factor anymore. They used it properly, and we move on. So with that being said, we'll talk about Ronda being suspended. Do you think that, I mean, the assumption is that they mentally put Ronda in a place that is similar to Brock Lesnar, where she doesn't have to be on the show every week. She probably doesn't want to, or doesn't feel like she needs to, or they feel like she doesn't need to. So this is just another way to get her off of the show without having to show up every week while still being a factor. Are you okay with that with regards to, like, because my mentality is Ronda Rousey wants her hardest to be a part of the women's roster how any other woman would want to be part of that roster and, like, be there, be present, be available. Continue keeping her as this, like, you know, Brock Lesnar figure of the women's division where she just shows up when it matters. And is on that level of she doesn't have to be there every week. And is this a contractually obligated, you know, she has a certain amount of dates? And I ask you that mainly because I don't know. I would assume as much, but I really don't know. I mean, if I want to be a wrestler, I don't know, it's hard to say. I could take a 30-day leave and get paid for it, sure. But I would assume that the passion would, you know, drive me to want to be there, right?
Well, let's back up for a half a second because – even after Mania, she was still present on Raw. Sure, she wasn't wrestling, but it's not like she really took much time off, which is much better than you can say for Brock, who shows up once or twice during an angle that goes over for 6 weeks and then maybe shows up at the pay-per-view, maybe not. Who knows? I mean, we're not going to see him till SummerSlam, and that's assuming he decides to show up. And Ronda at least shows up every week. She was on commentary, sure. They didn't want her to, you know, engage with Nia to protect them both until that go-home show. That's smart. And you don't need wrestling for a full-time, quote-unquote, wrestler to be on TV furthering a character, furthering a storyline. So I think she's been doing fine. Mention, if anything, it protects Alexa, because putting her up against an angry Naya, which we've already seen her lose to pretty handily, and then she got completely womanhandled, or whatever you really want to say, in the opening, and thrown through a table, and it was brutal. It was probably the best opening segment Raw has had in a long time, and sadly, it's kind of a necessary evil to just kind of remove Ronda from the situation now. That way, after Extreme Rules, you can build her up towards, you know, a marquee event like SummerSlam, and you're not wasting any kind of potential title change or giving her a loss too early or injuring her character, because tonight was really, really good.
Yeah, yeah. And don't get me wrong, I don't think that she's anywhere near Brock. I mean, I have issues with Brock that only just started showing their face in terms of my fandom. For a while, I was like, you know, it's cool, it's Brock. I really don't need to see him, you know, whatever. But the more the time progresses, the more that I see that they're not in any rush, the more I miss a champion. You know what I mean? Like a legit, like big time title holder who's like, I'm the boss and I'm here. And I don't want that to be Roman Reigns. I'm sorry. It's very hard to believe that character when he says, you know, I'll be here every week fighting, when I can't recall the last time Roman Reigns had a match on Raw, or how many he's had since January. So, yeah, but we'll get to that. So anyways, Ronda's gone for 30 days, and it's unfortunate because you see this badass opening and you're like, hell yeah, and then she's got to go away. But I also think that there's a lot of anticipation created because of that. You know, it's like, finally you get to see what she can do, and then she's suspended for 30 days. And who's to say she won't show up in between now and then, you know? So we go immediately to Seth Rollins, who was fresh off of a title win from last night, or title, you know, he got to keep his title. And as per usual, he issues an open challenge, anyone who wants to come out. And Drew McIntyre and Dolph Ziggler answer the call. And this match is for Dolph Ziggler to take on. Before we get to the results, there was a lot of comments who were saying, oh, I really thought it was going to be Drew. It's disappointing that it wasn't, blah, blah, blah. And I don't know if you and I are in the same boat, but I know Drew McIntyre is a name that's been around for years, but I'm okay with not rushing his push, if you will. Like, I'm okay with him not being the guy that took the IC title tonight, or, you know, because a lot of people, I mean, there was a lot of responses that were like, oh, man, I heard Drew's music. I really thought it was going to be him, or I saw his name on the screen. I thought he was going to be in the match. It's disappointing that he's not. And I think this has more to do with how badly we dislike Dolph Ziggler than how awesome we think Drew McIntyre is. What do you think?
That's kind of the narrative for the IWC in general. Like, whomever they dislike, they'll complain. And if you get partially swerved because there's a tag team that comes down and the wrong one gets the title shot, then it just gives them something else to complain about. Like, it doesn't... Well, how can I say it? Like, I agree with you where Drew doesn't need it. Drew's also still in the process of reestablishing himself on the main roster. Like,
right.
Anybody that remembers that name remembers him as, you know, the Chosen One, Broken Dreams washout, who ended up in, you know, three-man band and then was a complete joke before he just left. You know, he looks different now. Yes, he's much better now, sure. But as we see constantly with indie talent that goes to NXT and then gets called up, or foreign talent that goes to NXT and then gets called up, or just comes straight over, there's a adjustment period, because as much as wrestling Twitter and the IWC wants to make it seem like they're the majority in the opinions, they're like maybe 10% of the people that actually watch the product. And I think 10% is a little high. So just because you have that small niche of people that know who everybody is and think so-and-so deserves it, you've got most of the crowd that doesn't care. I mean, they might like his look, they might like his moveset, but they haven't bought into him yet. And on the flip side, yes, Dolph is a damaged product, but he's still an established product. Still somebody you can look at as a 2-time WWE champion and a 5-time Intercontinental champion going into this match, and won the U.S. championship a couple times. So Like, he's got some credibility to his name. So, sadly, it makes sense for it to be Dolph, even though I'd like it to be Drew, but I understand where it's all going.
And with that, we see Dolph Ziggler win the Intercontinental Championship in a bit of a surprise to a lot of people. And I like to think that 66.6% of this podcast is not very IWC heavy in terms of opinions. I like to think that, you know, 2/3 of us have a particular logical reasoning behind anything that we feel towards the wrestling product. We're not just blindly hating Dolph because, you know, his hair is poofy or because we find it to be, you know.
He wishes he was Billy Gunn and HBK. Rawr.
Right. He's a cheap version of HBK. I mean, any saying that, you know, and Harry, you know, no disrespect to Harry. He isn't nearly as bad as we make him sound, but sometimes he'll make a statement and I'm like, did you just get that off Twitter? Like, stop it. tonight Dolph Ziggler fucking pulled. He did what we know he can do and had an amazing match. Awesome. And Seth Rollins obviously did his part too. Truly, the only thing that bothers me is the lack of believability of Dolph Ziggler beating Seth Rollins, because we haven't seen Dolph do anything. And that goes in line with everything that we've seen over the past month and a half of him, or a little bit longer. The character isn't believable because we've seen him be so shitty for so long. And I don't mean wrestler, I mean character, including him doing the fake entrances and the record scratch. The whole character that he had on SmackDown just bored me to tears. I was not interested at all. And then he brings that same bravado over to this particular character that he has. And it's just like, dude, you're not that cool. You know, that bothers me. But this is a huge but. You can't deny his talent. And if you never allow a wrestler to try something new or to try to get over, then yeah, you're going to keep complaining about the same shit. And it's your fault as the fan, because you're still stuck on what Dolph was 3-4 months ago without realizing this is a good, if this was any other person, or if this was, let's just say, Drew McIntyre, you wouldn't be upset. Why not? Why wouldn't you be upset? Oh, because it's a cool markout moment that wasn't planned, that was a shock to everyone. But because it's Dolph, you get upset. And I am only saying this because I saw it in my comment section on Twitter, like, oh my God, Dolph just won the IC title. Well, I think this is one of those rare occasions where you're like, I mean, you either shit or get off the pot, right? And they're trying to make this work. We don't know what's going to happen in the future. I think that this was one of the small moments on Raw where it's like, oh shit, wow. How often do we say that anymore, you know?
Oh, completely. And I'm fully with you, because I was in a couple conversations where this was kind of like the title change that happens at the house show. Like, some people are just like, okay, so-and-so is not at the house show, so I don't want to go because nothing's going to happen. People have that same reaction with Raw. Like, we were saying the same thing about Raw all through the lead up going into Money in the Bank, that it was just formulaic and unexciting and uninspired. And now they come off of a pretty good pay-per-view, and then they hit us with a nice swerve with a nice karmic kind of ending too, since Seth, wait, did you watch the match? Am I spoiling anything for you, Tony?
No, I saw the important matches. So I saw Seth versus Elias. I saw the women's Money in the Bank. I didn't get to the men's, but I mean, it's really, I'm glad Braun won.
Braun match. They all gang up on him. They bury him under something. Then he goes roar, and he thinks he's Super Shredder from the Ninja Turtles and kills them all. Yeah, it's fun. But
yeah,
anyway, so when it comes to the whole Seth thing, he had to basically cheat to beat Elias, because they were in this similar kind of back and forth rolling cradle situation, and Seth grabbed himself a handful of tights, and that's how he beat Elias. So the fact that it was the shoe on the other foot with Ziggler, it was karmic. It was nice. And you really couldn't blame, you couldn't blame Ziggler for doing it, because he's usually a heel, but it was actually nice to throw that subtlety in there from whoever booked the match and all that other stuff, because that was a cute little wink, and I was like, oh, that was cool. That was nice.
Yeah, it was one of those little things that really proved to me that someone knows what they're doing, because this goes along the line of good storytelling, where last night Seth Rollins put on a hell of a match, and it's only 24 hours, and he's probably beaten up little moments like his knee buckling, like him not being able to hit certain moves the correct way, and finally that ending, like you said, that's good writing, and it's so simple. It's the most simple thing ever. Now you got Seth, who's basically beating himself up over it. And if you wanted to get deeper into the pathos of wrestling and the wrestler in a competitive sport, this could lead into Seth being like just like unsure of himself and this and that. I'm not saying do that, because I think they suck at those particular storylines. But what I'm saying is that's what good writing stems from, the smallest things meaning something heavier with emotion. So I felt that the ending and the idea that Dolph taking it from him was the perfect person, because it's like, shit, that was Dolph Ziggler. That's not supposed to happen.
So now, completely fantasy booking, hyperbole, whatever you want to call this, with all the lead up with Elias's match at Money in the Bank, where he felt the overwhelming need to always incorporate a chair, or then he did the dickish kind of thing of breaking the guitar, and then in one of his interviews backstage before his match, he brought the broken guitar and was playing it mockingly towards Elias, and then grabs a handful of tights to cheat, and now kind of gets the karma. Do you see Seth turning heel?
I think it could work, but probably not. He'll probably be included in the multi-man match at Extreme Rules, and people will remember that he's a part of the Shield and then forget again. I mean, that's just what they do, right?
I meant more from how the writing has been going, where you would see it aside from a heel turn, because all of the questionable shit he was doing really makes you kind of feel like, okay, are they turning him heel? What the hell are they doing?
True, yeah. But the only reason why I'm not 100% sold on it is because of the way the WWE has been booking faces for what seems like a very long time, where they're like super mean to heels. Like, you know, basically anyone that's ever faced Rusev, like, he's supposed to be the bad guy, but you got Ender trying to sleep with his wife, and like, it just, you know, certain things like that don't make sense. Like, wait a minute, hold on. So seeing Seth do the dastardly things to Elias, in any other world, yeah, I'd be like, yeah, he's eventually going to turn heel. But to me, it's like, that's just WWE's version of a face.
Which, that doesn't make much sense. But all right, I guess we can move on to the next thing.
Oh, yeah, because this is much more important. Kurt Hawkins and Bobby Roode decide to have a match, and of course, Bobby Roode wins. So it's a match in which I don't think anyone cared about either combatant. It was very short. I believe I've talked longer than the match itself. What do you think they're going to do with Kurt Hawkins' losing streak, if anything, and do you care?
I do not care. And I don't know. Like, maybe, I don't even know who they would break that losing streak on. Like, who is low enough on the totem pole or Teflon enough to just get, like, a goofy roll-up thing and, you know, have the whole shock and awe moment of, oh, my God, he broke the record, blah, blah, blah. But Kurt Hawkins hasn't been relevant since he came back. So, I don't know. That's kind of worthless. But I guess this also leads to another point where it's a little out of order, but we can touch on Jinder's match, too, since that was kind of irrelevant. What the hell is up with the people that lost their singles matches coming in for a squash match?
Yeah, I don't know. That was just a weird moment with his, you know, little new layer of characterization of tranquility and, like, what are we doing?
You there?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I'm here. Jinder is, I don't know. That was just a weird moment for me. The match was weird. I mean, Chad Gable got some offense in and it looked good, and then all of a sudden Jinder wins. So basically what it says to me is that they have no idea what to do with Jinder. They have him in this position where he's kind of like upper mid card and don't want to lose him because he could be useful. But as of right now, we don't got shit for you. So how about you beat Chad Gable, talk about tranquility, and then we'll just call it a day.
Yeah, and that's just kind of how both of those matches felt. Like, they had nothing else for them, but they wanted to put them on the Raw card anyway because reasons. Like, I guess they felt like they needed to get some kind of validity back after losses at Money in the Bank, right? Yeah, I guess, maybe?
Yeah, probably. I mean, you know, we could even go a match further and include Mojo Rawley and No Way Jose in the same vein, where we haven't cared about these guys, well, ever, really. And then tonight we're supposed to care. Like, we're supposed to care about gender now. We're supposed to start caring about Curt Hawkins' losing streak now after 200-and-something matches. And we're supposed to care about Mojo Rawley no longer staying hyped.
And, of course, the conga line. You can't forget the conga line. We have to care about that.
Yeah, yeah. My little brother was watching Raw with me tonight, and he didn't say much. But I'll tell you, the two things that he said were pretty gold. The first, well, this one's not all that funny, but he's like, didn't Adam Rose do the same exact thing but with a bunny? And I'm like, yeah, he did.
Everybody is noticing this now. This is getting terrible.
You're not wrong. And the second thing he said, which is a little out of order, but Kurt Angle came out to announce or to make an announcement. Roman Reigns interrupted him. And my brother, with like complete vigor and like actual anger, said something along the lines like, oh my God, you already lost. Stop and go back where you came from. And I was typing and I'm like, oh shit.
That's great.
And you have to keep in mind that this is a Big Show fan. So if you're upsetting a Big Show fan with your monotony, something is wrong.
Well, Big Show is at least larger than life, so he
yeah,
was definitely kind of Teflon, where he could just shake it off and be like, I'm 7 feet tall, fuck off.
Yeah, cute, real cute, all right.
Yeah.
Okay,
but,
so after Ziggler wins the title, after Curt Hawkins loses another match, you're going to have to take over just a little bit. I know Braun comes to the ring. The feed that I was using, the audio cut out completely. So I was going to try to do this funny thing where I just cut the promo for Braun in the recap, but I was too frustrated by trying to find another feed. But I assume the gist of it is that Braun was celebrating his win. Kevin Owens tries to be his friend. And then I see Braun pull Kevin Owens in and try to hit the power slam. Kevin Owens floats off and runs away. That's pretty much it, right?
I mean, yeah, you kind of nailed it perfectly. Kevin Owens playing up that whole, I'm hurt, I don't want to catch these hands, I just want to shake your hand. You know, so Kevin Owens had some interesting plays on words, and he was continuing his usual Kevin Owens shtick. But, yes, you basically nailed the gist of it.
So can we talk about how horrendous the nicknames were tonight, particularly the two Money in the Bank winners? What do we had? Miss Goddess in the Bank and Monster in the Bank? That's what I believe they were going with.
Well, you know, Braun coined that on the go-home, didn't he?
You know, but who wrote it is what I'm saying. Like, and not only that, but automatically the minute Michael Cole says anything, it loses any credibility towards entertainment. Especially considering the way he says it and how frequently he says it, as if it's going to be on a T-shirt tomorrow.
Oh, well, yeah, because that's all they do. Like, what the hell did we get last week from the Deleters of Worlds with the whole delete and eat or something like that? Like, everything is just a buzzword, a phrase, just to try to throw on a T-shirt and move the merchandise. Like, it's so transparent what they're trying to do. It's actually just irritating.
Yeah, I think that's what bothers me the most. I mean, you look at a promo from Paul Heyman, you know exactly what he's doing. In fact, he mentions what he's doing. He tells you, it is my job to sell you the event, the date, and the moment, the match that, you know, the marquee match. You know, he goes over that, and it's like a part of his shtick. But then you hear commentary and you're like, dude, come on. It's so blatant. Just quiet for a minute, okay? Stop it.
Yeah, but that's the one biggest problem with commentary nowadays is they don't know how to shut up and let a moment breathe. They've all got to try to get their shtick in.
Yeah, let's get to a fucking moment they wouldn't let breathe. Before that, Bailey goes to interact with Sasha, and I don't know if you saw this coming. I don't, Andrew, I know it came out of nowhere. Like, I know that this was just a moment that was complete shock and utter awe. But Bailey goes up to Sasha backstage, and they have a rumble, dude. They have a row, as they say, across the pond. Yeah, they were totally upset with each other, and they wrestled around a catering area, and I think someone threw a red Solo cup at another person. It was bad. It was really bad. So apparently they don't like each other.
That's partially out of order, though, isn't it?
Is it? I don't know.
Didn't that happen after their match when they tried to be nice, and then it just all blew up? So there's a whole bunch of oh my god moments, because it's like, oh no, Bailey tries to be like, oh, I remember when you were looking at your phone watching the match because you're such a perfectionist. I'm gonna try to repair the fridge, and Sasha's like,
I was watching it
on
my phone.
You saw my YouTube. Let's be friends again.
All of that shit together. Yeah, it was like a fucking like an episode of Degrassi, which I've never seen, but I assume is exactly like this. Where they're friends again after, you know, bringing up old memories. Oh, I bet you've watched it on your phone. I'm surprised you're not seeing it on your phone. Oh, look, I was. Oh, you know me so well. Oh, my God. They team up together. And then let's not forget that dastardly Riot Squad going backstage and just doing the craziest of things.
If Bailey and Sasha are Degrassi, then doesn't that make the Riot Squad like West Side Story? Because all they need to do is start snapping and thinking they're cool as they push things off tables and knock off cloths and tease
and
people by closing their laptops and then breaking them.
I mean, you know what? Did you see the vandalism that they caused on that mirror?
I know. Oh, and black lipstick, and then they pretend they're Team Rocket and they draw a giant R on it. Like, this is god fucking awful.
It's really bad. It's really bad. And these guys are the ones that when Michael Cole was all like, that's just pure vandalism. That's what that is. Well, yes, it is, Cole. And thank you
it
for that.
It was funny how they were trying to sell it, though. Come on. They're just like, they're causing a riot backstage. I'm like, no, they're not. They're like mussing up some stuff, but you'll just get two janitors to clean that up in 5 minutes. Like, that's not a fucking riot.
It's not a riot, not in the least, not even a little bit. So anyways, this leads to a tag match, which, I mean, it's one of those things where you know where it's going because you've seen it 100 times. And then art imitates life because they have a moment where after the match, after Sasha pushes Bailey on her ass, Bailey walks to Sasha backstage and says, I'm not done with you yet. Grabs her arm, and then they start fighting. In the show, Sasha's still walking. Bailey walks up to her and says, I'm not done with you yet. And then, like, the exact same thing happens. And this is, I think, the last time that they had a fight backstage was a few months ago, and it basically went the same exact way. And then a week or two later, they were friends again, begrudgingly. What are we doing here? And who cares anymore? It sucks because you see a match like last night where these women bust their ass and show that there's still a lot of drama there. There's still a high capability amongst all of them to do something amazing. And instead of allowing that to happen a long time ago, they do this stop and start push and pull thing with Bailey and Sasha to the point where no one cares anymore. No one. At least I don't think anyone cares.
I know I don't care because that's just, what the fuck? Like, I get that they might have tried the whole sometimes friends have arguments and sometimes friends fight. Sure, that might work for a week or so, but this has been going on since, what, Elimination Chamber? So it's like, really, just shit or get off the pot.
Before that.
Well, yeah, but let's go back to what you said before with the whole shit or get off the pot. Just have a blow-off match that we all want, give them at least 15 minutes so it's not some garbage 6-minute piece of shit match, and let's just have the payoff that everybody wants. Nobody cares about the story. We just want a decent match between the two because we know they can do that.
Yeah, they can. And I love how it went. They after the fight that they had, we go back to Kurt Angle in the ring like, this show is shit. I can't. It was a weird
transition. That was great because I wasn't sure if that was ad-libbed or if he was supposed to be like, wow, everything's crazy or going to hell or whatever the hell he said. And I'm like, oh,
right.
that was a perfect time to cut back. That was great.
Nice little shoot that wasn't supposed to be a shoot. Yeah, for sure. And then this entire little feud on Raw tonight was exclamated at the very end with Bayley tossing, of all things, a half-empty water bottle to the back of a moving vehicle. So if that's not drama, I don't know what is.
Top quality drama. Best writing ever.
From two people who feel that they're, or from two people who need a lot of help in their acting chops, to two people who I can't stress enough how much they're making me laugh. We see the B team pull a full, I don't even know what to call it. Curtis Axel dresses up horribly as Matt Hardy. And Bo Dallas does his best to impersonate his brother and does an amazing job at it.
I was about to say, that was a pretty damn perfect Bray Wyatt. Like, I was impressed.
That was so, I mean, you know, it's one thing for Curtis Axel to do a shitty Matt Hardy, but he had the laugh down, I think. And it's funny. Everything was funny. But then you see Bo Dallas just do Bray Wyatt so well and then lose traction in the promo. And then the little things like the small version of the lantern, their inability to stop the tape and have to duck out of frame. Those are great. Those are all just awesome. It was funny as hell. It was short enough to be cool. And just the reality that you know that Bo Dallas is Bray Wyatt's younger brother, and then seeing this, it just makes you feel like it's a fun little moment in wrestling. This is funny. And whoever's writing should look at this moment and say, this is what we need to do more of. You know, not with everybody, but with characters that are capable of doing so, like the B Squad, so the B Team. So, yeah, I thought that was one of the small highlights of Raw.
I mean, there were more than just a couple highlights tonight, which I'll give it some credit for. But, yes, that was one of the brighter spots because that was just hilarious. Like, it was well done. And you could tell even Bray and Matt were kind of amused in the ring when they kept cutting back to them. So that's good.
Yeah, it was great. Angle has an announcement to make. It was ordered by Stephanie McMahon for him to do so via Baron Corbin, who I feel says, I mean, if you listen back to maybe 2 to 3 weeks ago, I talked heavily about how much I hate Baron Corbin and how little he brings to the table. I'm not flip-flopping, but I am saying that this new character, who I did not believe in either, is doing some things to me. Like, I think it's a completely unnecessary role with a completely stupid title, but Baron Corbin, literally all he had to do was cut his hair, and for whatever reason, now I believe in everything he says. I don't know how or why, but it has worked. With that being said, him, like, item line vetoing shit that Kurt Angle's going to say on a bunch of flashcards. I thought that was funny. Although I don't know why he has so many flashcards all of a sudden. And if he does use flashcards, he should probably be speaking better than he does. So maybe he needs to find a new method. The announcement takes some time to, you know, to be said because he's interrupted. But essentially what the announcement is, I think, is there's going to be a multi-man match at Extreme Rules. Roman Reigns comes down, and again, we're back to Reigns in the title picture. And again, I don't think anybody cares. Lashley into the fold, I don't think anybody cares.
Less people cared. Less people cared. Yeah. There were at least audible cheers and boos for Roman. There was no noise for Lashley.
Yeah, for Bob. Okay.
Good old
this man. Leads to the Revival coming out, and I don't know
how many people cared. Again, I would assume not many because the crowd didn't really, you know, give much love. They challenge Roman and Bobby Lashley to a match, and at the very least, they're self-aware. They're saying that they're hoping they can latch on to or jump onto the fact that these guys don't get along when catapult their careers and blah, blah, blah. I like that moment. I like the Revival constantly honing in on wrestling tropes and just using them or trying to use them and saying how they're very obvious because they are very much old school wrestlers in a new school, you know, setting. So them doing that just kind of makes sense for their characters, and I like it. This leads to a match, and I want to read to you what I wrote in the report, okay?
Okay.
So, Wilder chops the back of the knee down. Phil and his daughter realize how long the line is, so Phil places glasses on his head and grabs a nearby wooden stick. He pretends to be blind and cuts the line while others watch and wonder as the checkout guy tries to lie to Phil. In comes his daughter Alex, who drops some sick knowledge on the checkout dude and wins the day. Meanwhile, Cam and Mitchell are at a dry cleaner's trying to get their Vietnamese daughter Lily from inside, and I come to the reality that the feed has switched and it's taken me 3 full minutes to realize that I'm not watching wrestling anymore. That is how uninterested...
You actually wrote that? You actually wrote that in your report?
Yes. I remember watching the beginning of the match, and then they go to a commercial. And when the commercial stops, I don't remember the switch. I don't know how it happened or when. When the commercial stops, Modern Family comes on. And that's what I saw. And I'm laughing, and I'm like, this is great. I remember this episode. Ha, ha, ha. And then I'm like, what the fuck? So I type it out, and I realize I'm not watching wrestling anymore.
I was entertained.
Yeah, more so by Phil Dunphy and his awesomeness than Roman Reigns and Bobby Lashley beating a tag team that probably should have mattered but didn't.
Well, that's not saying much because this entire match was set up just to increase tension between Lashley and Reigns, and I guess the Revival needed a paycheck because they weren't on Money in the Bank and we haven't seen them in a little bit. So, fuck it, throw them on Raw. Like,
Bob and
Roman. The best thing I can say about this is Roman, when he's either the better talker or at least given more natural things to say, his promos aren't bad. You know, Bobby Lashley, even though he's gotten better since his time in Impact, is still not very fluid on the mic. So
right.
Roman easily rebutted him, and then the little itty-bitty, like, flash of, like, Roman doing his white guy voice when he cut off the Revival before the match started, like, that was beautiful, because just his whole, oh, yeah, you two are good, like, he's like, shut up and get in a fucking ring. Like, come on. Like, I'm like, all right, when you let Roman kind of, even if it was scripted, when you let him feel like he's more off the cuff, he's more entertaining. He's more relatable. He's more enjoyable. Bring that Roman out more. We need off-the-cuff Roman. We need chill Roman.
No.
That's what we need.
Seriously, a moment like that, you really start to wonder, like, well, where is the divide? Because you guys really suck at this character, and yet you see these small flashes that were like, ha, ha, that's funny, you know? And, like, where's that guy? Is that guy in existence? Is that Roman, the wrestler, the guy behind the wrestler? Is that written? Is that on the script? Is it on the, you know, page, colored chartreuse that, you know, the script is written on? I don't know. We don't know because we're not allowed to know. But just so you know, a majority of your written shit sucks, WWE. So if that wasn't written, then maybe you should pay attention to that because it means it's more natural, and that's what people buy into. Natural. You know, how people really talk in the world, you know?
Yeah, and especially if you want Roman to come off kind of like a condescending dick, what better way than to just be like, yeah, at some point cut him off, tease them with how they sound, and then tell them to get in the ring so they can, you know, get their ass beat. Like, that's
just
perfect.
And shut up and get beat. Just stop. Okay, so we move on to Elias, who sings a song. There's really nothing else after that. He just sings a little song and insults the crowd.
Hey, that was a pretty good song. I'm sorry.
That was
probably, like, his best song ever, and they let him actually do the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, it was longer than most. No, I'm not mad at, you know, because you got to keep him in the limelight. You have to have him be there. And Elias is entertaining as shit. And, I mean, he's Elias. I mean, if you would have told me, you know, when he was the Drifter in NXT, just walking around with the guitar, and then showed up on Raw randomly walking around with the guitar, I'm like, what the hell are they going to do with this guy? I think from that day to today, they've shown me what they're going to do. And I think a majority has to do with Elias and his ability to just harness the crowd's energy into something that's, you know, beneficial to him, the character. So, no, major props to him. And tonight was another example. Remember, there was a time where he couldn't get any words out, and it just became tedious and long and boring. Now people want to hear what he has to say, even knowing there's going to be an insult eventually.
Yeah, and that was great how he tied the insult into the word vapid. I'm like, yeah. I was waiting for it because I'm like, this is just a giant hype song for, you know, why, what would Elias do and walk with Elias and all that stuff. And then it's like vapid, like the people in Grand Rapids. I'm like, oh, that's clever. My only, I guess, knock on the song would be kind of a callback to what we put over earlier in the show with the subtlety of how Ziggler beat Rollins. Then you have Elias come out and spell it out in purple fucking crayon in his song about how, you know, it was karma, how you had to cheat to beat me, and then, you know, same thing happened to you. Ha ha, go fuck off. It's like, really?
If
Cole wasn't saying it, what'd he have to? Yeah. It's like, Cole wasn't beating it in the ground. Why did Elias have to say it? God damn it.
Yeah. So, Seth cheated to win and then got cheated, in case you guys didn't see that or understand it. It was there. Layers.
News at 11.
So immediately after that, Seth Rollins has a little interview where he says he will get his rematch and he will face Dolph Ziggler next week, which hopefully is another amazing match. I had fun with it, so we'll see what goes down. It's most likely that Seth Rollins is not going to win the title back next week, but it will be a valiant effort from the man. This leads us to the main event where we see Baron Corbin team up with Kevin Owens to take on Braun and Finn. I didn't see this match get made. It may have been during a moment where, you know, my feed went out, so I thought it was kind of odd. I found it more odd that Baron Corbin was, you know, dressed as Constable, but it makes sense if he didn't know he was having a match until, you know, the moment before he was having said match. Because if not, then we're going full corporate Kane with Baron Corbin, where he wrestles in his, you know, nice pants and blue vest, which, whatever. I don't care. Corbin, like I said, Corbin, I've never liked Corbin in the ring, and I've thought his character has been shitty and uninteresting and uninspired. But since he's been put in this role, no matter how asinine I think the title is, I think that it has changed a lot of things. And the match wasn't bad, you know. Coach over here is saying he's so shocked and impressed by Constable Corbin, as if he's been in this leadership role or this executive role for years and hasn't wrestled a match in so long. I mean, I don't know if you noticed that, but like everything that Coach was saying was like, man, Corbin is really impressing me tonight. I mean, I can't believe Constable Corbin is capable of this type of wrestling. Like, he's a wrestler. Why are you applauding him for something he should know how to do?
Well, to be fair, Coach was gone for like 10 years. And since being drafted to Raw, Corbin had one match against No Way Jose and then cost Curt Hawkins his win against the Jobber. I might have missed something. I don't think I did. But like, he's had maybe 2-3 matches in what? It's been 3 months. So,
it's surprising to see
he's okay. So, but yeah, the way the match was set up was actually kind of amusing, where Constable Corbin and Angle were walking in the back. Finn tried to like interject himself into the Extreme Rules thing by saying, "I'll do whatever it takes to qualify for that," you know, doing the good babyface thing. And then Owens pops up behind him and he's just like, "What? You lost? Stop trying to weasel your way into things." And then Finn just smiles and just goes, "Yeah, well, at least I can sense when there's danger behind me." And then they pan out, and then Braun is standing behind Owens. And then Owens runs off to the other side of, like, the little divide where Corbin is there. And that's when Braun declares that Finn is his friend. And he's basically just like, I don't like you hassling my friend. And if we got issues, then we can settle this or something like that. And then, you know, Corbin tried to square up a little bit. And I guess that was kind of why the match was made.
How fun.
It worked nicely, and I agree with you completely that Corbin actually has been handling this role fairly well. He wrestled decently. Like, he didn't do that stupid run around the pole and come in with a clothesline thing, I don't think, unless I blinked and missed it. But the match was fine. The way Braun took himself out so that he could technically take the L because he has the briefcase now, like, that was somewhat clever. So, you know, the way it all played into itself was nice storytelling.
Yeah, I thought it was a serviceable main event that really didn't hurt anybody or anything. And although I'm not big on the train that says, you know, Braun lost, oh my God, I don't think that that's going to be the case with Braun Strowman. I do understand the fear, because if there's one thing that happens almost consistently with the Money in the Bank briefcase winner is that he or she loses all the time. Because for whatever reason, they assume that simply because he has a briefcase, it doesn't matter if he loses every week. When in fact, it very much does. It damages the person who you assume is going to eventually be the, you know, big-time champion.
Yeah, but there's still a small, I guess, way to protect that line of thought. And that is very simply the fact that you have the briefcase. You're looking past whatever match you have. You're trying to find an opening to get the belt. So whatever you're doing currently, unless it's actually your cash in, doesn't matter to you. So you can win it. Mm. You can lose it. It's merely a stepping stone until you find your opportunity or, you know, pull a Rob Van Dam and call your shot and tell the guy when you're challenging for it and all that other stuff. So there is a little bit of sports analogy storytelling that you could use to argue it. Granted, I don't know if that's what WWE's whole modus operandi is when it comes to, you know, Money in the Bank briefcase holders, but that's kind of the excuse I've always made for them.
Well, I don't make excuses for them. It's not my job. But
I was about to say, you can call bullshit as much as you want, but I'm just, that's at least my way of kind of logically validating it in my head.
It's always bothered me that the automatic, I mean, realistically, the briefcase means whenever, regardless of the time and place or whatever, you're most likely going to take the title, and that's fine. You know, the surprise element, the fact that this person's ass has been beaten and you're just there to pick up the scraps, all of that is okay by me. But again, I feel like it's more exaggerated. Their losses are more obvious. Like, this person walks out with a briefcase, and I'm talking everyone from Sandow to Swagger to Ziggler to even John Cena. Like, they just lose more because for whatever mindset the WWE has, they assume that this briefcase means it doesn't matter how many times they lose, they're going to be okay because they're going to win the title soon. And I just don't think that's the case. I'm not saying they need to win every single match, but you can't use that as a crutch, you know?
I get what you're saying, but it's kind of a thing in sports. You know, how many track and field races have you seen where the person's got such a big lead, they jog? Or I know there's been stuff on SportsCenter where people literally start dancing or they do something dumb because they're that far ahead that it doesn't matter to them that they can't lose because they're Teflon, so to speak. And the briefcase is the same concept where unless it's a match for the briefcase, it doesn't matter what happens because you've got an automatic number one contendership in a box. So who cares if you lose four matches on Raw or some kind of random pay-per-view match, as long as you have the briefcase, you're still in the lead, so to speak. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I have never once seen a track and field televised or live, but I get what you're saying.
You need to watch Sports Nation or something like that goes for, like, the random shit sometimes, because people do dumb shit when they think they can't lose. And, you know, sometimes it bites them in the ass, which is exactly what the Money in the Bank kind of thing is, like with Corbin last year, where he thought he couldn't lose, cashed it in, got, you know, his ass kicked real quick. So it's the same concept.
Dummy. Well, that brings us to the end of Raw. If we were with Harry, he would have us review Money in the Bank because that's so important. But we're not going to do that. So what was your favorite match or moment of Raw?
Ooh, favorite match or moment. I'm going to have to give it to the opening segment because that kicked things off with a nice tone, nice energy, and that was the Ronda people have been wanting to see since she signed. And much like you brought up earlier, we got that little bit of a taste, and now she's suspended. So now it's like the whole Rocky Horror Picture Show. She said Antissa, but when are we going to get patient?
Nice. Your least favorite match or moment of Raw?
Oh, you're not going to give me yours? You're just going to want me to go all down one shot?
Oh,
are
we going back and forth? Sure. I don't give a shit how it works. I don't give a shit. I'm going to go with Seth versus Dolph, just so that I'm not picking the same one as you, and also to give them a little bit of credit because it was a pretty good match. Not that it was a shock, but what was a shock was the ending, so that helped it a lot, too. I had a good time watching it.
Fair enough.
Okay,
and
now
is this the Greg Watry moment?
Yes, the Greg Watry moment.
Yes, the Greg Watry moment is probably whatever the hell is going on with Sasha and Bayley, because I want that to be over.
100% agree, and this is one where I'm going to choose the same thing as you because I'm not from the stupid little, oh, you know, we're friends, we should move on from this, to the very obvious, like, we're not friends, never mind moving on from this, fuck you, bitch, I hate you. And also the horrible wig placement, Sasha, come on, girl, you know better than that. I told you to get yourself a black friend. Apparently you haven't, because damn. Yeah, so that I agree completely. Your MVP of Raw?
Oh, no, this is actually difficult because it wasn't a bad episode of Raw, so there was actually a couple decent things to pick from. This is going to be hard for me to say because I have not been a big supporter of his, much like you, much like our wonderful publisher, Mr. DeMarco, but I think Baron Corbin gets my MVP tonight. How about yourself?
I'm going to give it to Ronda just so I can give her credit for the beginning because, man, this is what we've wanted from you. And, I mean, even if you stumbled your lines a little bit backstage, that whole badassery is what people are looking for, you know, not the scripted badass. So, you know, I don't give a shit. You never – when you watch Raw today, you did not think for a second that she was going to turn around and smack Kurt Angle with the briefcase as frequently as she did. And also, I don't know if you saw, but that punch to the gut of Alexa Bliss, if that didn't hurt, man – awesome for pulling it, but that shit looked like it hurt bad.
Yeah, that looked like that landed, and honestly, my favorite part to her beating down Kurt Angle was as she hit him, she basically was just screaming at him, I thought you were my friend. How could you let this happen? And it was just a wonderfully, like, just it seemed natural, like a betrayal kind of moment. It's stereotypical for wrestling, obviously, but just the way she pulled it off and just in between beats of the briefcase. Like, I'm like, okay, that was inadvertently amusing, but really cool at the same time.
Yeah. I thought it was great. What else do we do? Oh yeah. The rating. Okay. Go ahead.
See, the number out of 10 would be, I'm going to go siete. How about you?
Pretty much the same. I enjoyed a majority of the show for the entertainment sake, but it was a little wrestling light in terms of quality matches, and the matches that did happen included people that I just didn't care about. And I think like the second hour kind of dragged on a bit. You include that with the Sasha Bayley saga that doesn't want to end, then, you know, yeah, 7's a pretty good number for it.
No, that's fine, because I agree that it was a little wrestling light, but compared to what we've been accustomed to from WWE the last few months. And just the fact that they were actually able to pull off something that was mostly entertaining from start to finish. I can forgive a little light wrestling for an, in general, entertaining show.
Yeah. You know, it was a good time. Good enough for us to, you know, talk about and not be angry at anything. That's got to mean something.
I mean, yeah, especially with it just being you and me and no Harry. Yeah, that's definitely saying something.
Yeah, because Harry would say, well, I'm inclined to disagree, Tony, and here's why. And then I'd say, I don't care, Harry. And then he'd be like, whoa, shit. And then you'd go, ha, 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 ha. And that's how that would go.
Yeah, that is kind of how our dynamic works at the moment, yeah.
Well, everybody, thank you for listening, all two of you. I stopped doing this for an audience like 3 years ago.
We need to, there's a special plug that we should probably bring up, which I don't know if he told you, but I'll plug it then. The ChairShot.com, ChairShot Radio Network, going to be returning the Greg DeMarco show tomorrow with Greg, Patrick, and I'm pretty sure Denise Salcedo is going to be on that show tomorrow, which you might know her from the X-Pac 12360, and she did the WWE FYC interviews that have been floating around Twitter and all that other stuff. So make sure to listen tomorrow, either live with Blog Talk or on demand at ChairShot Radio Network, for the return of the Greg DeMarco show.
What a shitty show. No, I'm kidding.
I know, it's named after such an asshole. What can I say?
I know. I really wanted to name this the Tony Acero show, and he said no. So it's fine. I understand, Greg. Fuck you. Listen to Greg tomorrow. He's great. He's enjoyable. He predicts things that will never happen, and then when they don't happen, he says to everyone, see, I know. I knew it. Just wanted to see what you guys would say. Stupid Greg.
Now. Don't misrepresent. When he's wrong, he says he's wrong, and he owns it like a man.
Except when he's wrong.
I mean, whatever happens after the mic goes off between you and him, that's up to you. I'm not privy to that one.
No, Greg is awesome. I've written with the guy. He, you know, he gave me a push when I needed it, and I took over, and, you know, he's a big part of the reason why I am where I'm at. Well, actually, I'd like to think that I built the majority of my success on my own, but he was a good tag team partner.
Oh, that's a good one. All right. So is he like the Marty Jannetty to your Shawn Michaels, or is he better than Jannetty?
He's better than Jannetty for sure.
I like how you're not owning up to a certain analogy. You're just like, better than Jannetty. That's what we're going with.
Yes, that's the extent of my yeah. That's what we're doing. So I think Harry will be back next week. Yay! So for everyone that you know, everyone that missed him, he'll be back next week.
The
oh,
beats
yeah, I
that you
sign
just
off,
add
huh?
into that are just funny as shit. That's on here. I thought the extended beats were purposeful, just, you know, insert cricket noise here kind of thing.
It's you know, a majority of my pauses are either very intentional or I'm doing something else.
So they either are intentional or they aren't. Yes, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah. Either incredibly intentional or due to apathy towards the show and much more care into anything else that I'm doing, unintentional. With that being said...
Ouch, I resemble that remark a little bit.
No, you don't. You're fine. I pay attention to you, just not
the
show, if that makes any sense. You know?
I bet you say that to all the boys.
No, I don't say that to Harry. I'm pretty sure you're well aware of that.
All right, I guess we should just sign off now. Hit your line.
All right, deuces, bitches.